Welcome to the Rise to the Challenge podcast. Joined today, he's a type 1 diabetic, the creator of the Diabetic Athletic, and a fitness coach. It's Nicholas Karakandas. How are you doing today, Nicholas?
I'm good, thanks, brother. I'm good, thank you very much. If I knew what button it was on the podcast, I would have put the applause, but that wouldn't have been good. I'm good, thanks, buddy. I'm good, thanks, Alex. How are you?
Doing good. We are so excited to have you on the show to talk about your rise to the challenge. What we'd like to do with all of our guests is go right to the beginning. Talk about where you're from and what you like doing growing up.
Wow. Okay. Right to the beginning. Well, I'm from Cape Town. I'm from Cape Town, South Africa. I was born here and just never left. I was born in a suburb called Deep Reverts in the southern suburbs. And I've been living with type 1 diabetes since I was 7 years old. I'm now 36 years old. So we're going on the 30-year mark. And growing up was a loaded question. It was a trip. I grew up, diabetes aside, I grew up in a loving home, but it had a lot of challenges. You know, my parents had their trials and tribulations, and I don't know if we're going to get into that, but really it was a rough start to life. And then kind of diabetes happened. And the two of those things together really molded my path as to where I am right now, you know, birthed into a life of trauma and then losing my health before I even really was old enough to know what health was. That kind of led me to a stage in my life where I now help people get out of their heads and into their lives to take them from whatever life they might be living right now to opening their eyes and helping them see the pathway and what is actually possible for us to try and, live the most highest performing lifestyle possible. And that really goes into the body, the mindset, and our relationship with ourselves. So going back to the very beginning, growing up was great. You know, it wasn't all terrible. That was kind of growing up in a nutshell. I guess that's pretty much, that's where it started, so to speak.
You mentioned the traumas and diabetes. Did you ever feel that once you go from each stage that it didn't feel like it was going to get better? Like sometimes you get that initial, oh, you're diagnosed with diabetes and you feel that it's going to go downhill because, oh, I'm not going to feel good. I'm not going to get a cure or anything like that. Was that something that you were going through where each stage it was kind of getting a hit on you? Like you felt like, can it get better? Can my year get good?
Mm. Yeah, that's, I think that question, depending on when you ask it and for how long you've been living with your diabetes, that question always changes. My mother had type 1 diabetes. She was diagnosed just, kind of 3 years before I was. So I kind of got an insight into what diabetes looked like from the outside. But, those of us living with diabetes, I mean, you don't really know what it's like with diabetes unless you're living with the condition, like 3 a.m. in the morning, sitting at the end of your bed, whether or not your feet touch the floor or not, but they're hanging off the end of the bed there. And you're thinking about, whatever we do and we think about when we've just corrected a hypo in the morning. But I went from a stage of accepting my diabetes for what it was, that initial, I guess, shock and acceptance. And you go, right, I've got this thing. You accept it, but then very shortly after that, trying to be too good for too long, or just really just having it and getting tired of this new thing that's now part of your life, we all go through, a phase of burnout. And my burnout lasted a very long time. When I was diagnosed, I was on private care, but very shortly after, the endocrinologist I had, he went to the private sector and I was on public, health for almost all my life until I started making money. And so I went through a very, good stage as soon as I was diagnosed. My endocrinologist, he was really, really, he was really, really good. But he was like, look, bud, you're standing at a crossroads here. You can either manage your diabetes and put some effort into controlling it, or it's going to manage you and it's going to control you. And I kind of accepted that. I took that and I ran with that. And I was like, right, that is it. It was no different to the trauma I speak of. My parents were, addicted to heroin. And so drug addiction affects the entire family. It doesn't matter who's got the drug addiction, the entire family suffers. And diabetes was very much the same. It didn't matter who had diabetes, whether it was just my mom or me, but the whole family, kind of dealt with it. And so I was like, right, I've got to deal with this. I'm not going to let it control me. I'll, you know, give it my best go. And then I went through burnout for almost my entire teenage stint. This was like an 8-year, 7-year stage of burnout where I just ignored my diabetes completely. I played sports in school and 26, I think, in milligrams per deciliter. What is 26 millimoles? About 400. I used to play sports like throughout the day. I'd leave my insulin at home around about 400 milligrams per deciliter. Like I would completely ignore, you know, my diabetes. And so everything's fine when you're ignoring it, right? But then it wasn't. And I started to, feel the effects of one, burnout, two, ignoring something that doesn't just go away. And that kind of gave me the insight to, I suppose, the darker side of diabetes, ignoring what should be really addressed. And then I went into, I got into this industry that I'm in now. And so I started to learn what was required and needed and how to take care of myself. I started documenting that journey, my introduction of becoming a new personal trainer into, you know, going further into my studies. And then as a locally sponsored athlete, Diabetic Athletic was really the documentation of that journey. And that's when I kind of went from accepting it, thinking I was okay, realizing it was a whole lot harder than I ever thought it would be, to going to a complete stage of burnout, to going, right, I need to get this. I don't have this, but I need to get this. And then that's where that started. And then I was around about 18 when I started as a personal trainer. That's been the journey.
I think it's so appreciative that you're open about the burnout, because if you ask any diabetic, most likely they're probably going to say that they never had that moment. Or you see the creators online that will not talk about that kind of stage in their life. And I always say my burnout was, especially for us where we had it at young ages, my mom's going to yell at me because I always get this year wrong. I think I was 10 or 11. When I got it, or 11 or 12. So I'm going into that middle school to high school up to college kind of time where I have it. And you were younger, but we're still kind of in that same stage. I was rebellious. Like I was trying to see how far could I take my body, like chocolate milkshakes, probably not the smartest idea to eat as a diabetic because you can't adjust for insulin. But I was always challenging and it took a toll on me. And until recently, where I kind of was like, okay, I need to focus. That's kind of where I look back at my time during that stage. And I'm like, why did I do that? Why did I force myself to go down that path and struggle for all those years? So it's very honorable that you were able to share that with your burnout. From someone that you are working with now, it's kind of fast forwarding it. What would you tell someone if they're going through that? How would you help them to kind of not go down that path because of the long-term effects that it could play?
That is a very good question. I mean, on the note of burnout, you know, a lot of us don't talk about it. A lot of us don't speak about the things we want to speak about with diabetes, purely because there's a lot of judgment on the side of going, I don't have this. I wish I did. You know, I am a professional car driver, but I don't know how to drive. It's kind of all how we feel, but we shouldn't. You know, we think we've got diabetes and it's our body. Now we must handle it on our own. And, you know, that on its own leads us to burnout, because that is quite literally saying, right, now you need to be able to strip the engine of this car, put it back together. You're racing on Saturday. Go. You just got given a car and all of a sudden it's a lot to take on. And burnout, you know, of all the complications that come with diabetes, and it's not just physical, it's mental and the emotional side. Burnout is the most common complication of diabetes.
Yep.
Excuse me. And so one, it's difficult to talk about. Two, it's the very first complication we all kind of, you know, we get. And it's hard to navigate, especially because you can't read the label when you're inside the bottle. And we don't ever get told that. And then we don't realize it. You know, we're in the bottle, things are happening, but we need someone to come and say, listen, it's not that it's not normal, but it's not normal to be able to read the bottle if you're inside the bottle. And so someone like me would come along and say, look, you are here right now. You won't, you know, there's four stages. There's four stages that I like, you know, I've kind of coined it as one of my frameworks, but there's four stages we all go through, from diabetic diagnosis to diabetic domination. And the first one is the unseen battle. It's where we grapple with the hidden struggles and the challenges, and we navigate the path in like stealth mode with diabetes. And then stage two is the tornado of trials. It's kind of like survival mode. We go from hiding with our condition, with the unseen battles, kind of keeping it from our colleagues and from our friends at school and our teachers, and, you know, checking our sugars like in the background and not giving insulin at the dinner table because we don't want to look like we're sick or whatever it is. And that's the first phase where we're kind of hiding from, well, our true, well, who we are, right? We're kind of in that, we're in that closet, so to speak, and we're just hiding. And then we go through the tornado of trials where we're figuring this diabetes out, but we're really just in survival mode over there. And then stage three is growing, where you start to actually accept your identity. You start to accept your diabetes. You start to see it as part of you, nothing extra. You don't try and fit your management into your day, but your day revolves around your management. You start flourishing, you start growing. And then there's stage four, which is domination, where you're actually starting to do so much more, not because you're diabetic, in spite of it. And so those four phases, when someone comes to me, is the first thing is to try and find out where my client is. Where are they in those four phases? Doesn't matter if you've been diagnosed 10 weeks ago or 10 years ago. Some of us never get out of those first two phases of either hiding and surviving, right? You know, we're managing our diabetes till we're not, and we try and stay as comfortable as we can until we're not, we're no longer comfortable. My mother was diagnosed, worked at the same place for 17 years, and she passed away a year ago, but I went to go visit her, just before that, and I found out that she still didn't check her sugars in front of the same staff that she had been working around for 17 years. It is very common for us to not get out of those two phases. And so to answer your question, I just wanted to put some background onto that, is that when someone comes to me, it's to find out, where are they? Where are you with your diabetes? You know, we all say that we need to educate people without diabetes and get rid of diabetic stigma and, you know, how hard it can be with the diabetic stigma. But if you take us collectively now as people living with diabetes, a lot of us don't do anything to break the stigma. We try and tell people, no, we're not sick, and no, there is a stigma attached to diabetes and it shouldn't. But what are we actually doing to be on the other side of that coin, to like absolutely set the new standard for people who are living with a chronic condition that is a very slow turning wheel? It lets us get away with a lot for a very long time until rent is due. And so, it's to find out where they are in those stages of hiding, surviving, growing, and then dominating. And then to kind of show them, right, this is where you are, this is where you can be. And then I guess the question after that is, do you want my help with it? Or just to highlight the path to show them that there are many other levels that they can get to. And it's where they are now is definitely not where, you know, in the bottle, you kind of go, this is what that label says, the one you can't read. Now you know what it says and go forth and conquer.
When you were growing up, what was that dream job that you were wanting? Was it always what you're doing now? Or was it something completely different?
But I wanted to be in the army. That is all I wanted to do growing up, is I wanted to join the army. I didn't know what army. I don't even know. You know, we didn't really have a great army here. And well, we did actually. Well, I guess we had a good army back in the day. But I mean, it was never just then, but never anything, you know, like the States or any of the world powers. But I liked the idea of the army, and I'm not even too sure why, but that was kind of crushed because, well, you can't join the army. Maybe now, I don't think so though. I don't see how it would work. You can't join the army living with diabetes. Yep. And I'm pretty sure maybe there are people, but that was what I wanted to be growing up. And then I became a gym owner, personal trainer, kind of was as close as I could get to joining the army, I guess. Yeah, that was the dream job.
As a gym owner, what was the hardest challenge you faced owning your own business?
Oh my gosh, buddy, the business part of it. So I got into the industry, you know, there's that expression or that saying, I'm going to butcher it now, but it's like, don't, if you're passionate about something, don't do it as a job. because, you know, passion kind of, I got into, well, even before that, when we were doing our job shadowing, you know, at like 16, you start going, okay, gosh, I'm going to be ending school now at 18, we call it matric here. What am I going to do? And I went to job shadow a biokineticist. I went to job shadow a nutritionist, and I went to job shadow a personal trainer. The biokineticist was great. It was a little bit more of an academic, you know, approach, and perhaps, you know, a little bit closer onto the medical professional side of that thing. But it was the type of clients that they work with wasn't really the kind of activity and clients that I wanted to work with. It was very slow, you know, rehabilitative and that kind of thing. And I thought, no. And the nutrition industry at that time was very female dominated at that point. And just, I didn't know of, I mean, I was only 16, so, you know, I didn't have much to go off, but I just felt it was very female orientated. Perhaps it was just, you know, the area or where I was from. And then the personal trainer had the most appeal to me purely because I loved sports performance and training for performance, training to not just look better. I was more, the first gym I opened was called 180, and the slogan was, we don't use machines, we create them. It was really to, you know, make you a master outside of the gym and a slave kind of inside, but, you know, but it was very performance based. And so I went into, you know, I went into personal training, that led me to, starting up my, you know, my first gym. I bought into a gym when I was, you know, after I'd worked as a trainer for about 3 years, but I bought into a lot of debt. I didn't read, you know, I just went on face value. I'd worked for this guy for 3 years. He said, look, why don't you buy in 150,000 Rand, which I think is like $15,000 at the time. And I did that, and I was like 20% gym owner. Yes, you know, title. You're not really geared up to business. You're chasing titles. I was 22 years old. I was like, right, I'm no longer a personal trainer. I'm a gym owner. And I thought, geez, you know, I made it. And then I realized that there were 3.5 million rands worth of debt on the book. So I had bought into a lot of debt, more debt than I even knew how I was going to repay. And, well, the lady I was seeing at the time, who is now my wife and, you know, mother of my child, she was and still is an attorney. And she kind of came in and said, right, blah, 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 X, Y, Z. And then all of a sudden I had a clientele base. I had an asset list. I had a gym. I had all the equipment and no liabilities. They had to take the liabilities themselves because it was, well, I guess I was better represented, but it wasn't right what they did. I mean, it was pretty. We've got an expression here in South Africa, scallum. It was just like criminal. It wasn't nice what they did there. And so to answer your question and to go back to that, all of a sudden there I was, like a diabetic diagnosis. There you go, diabetes, handle it as best you can. All of a sudden I had a packed gym, a business to run. And all I was at that stage was a new personal trainer. I had no idea about business, how to run business, how to work with people, how to network. I was kind of socially unfinished. You know, I was a great trainer, but when it came to networking, I knew nothing. And I was actually not good at it. And so the hardest part about becoming a trainer and owning gyms was the business side of things. To make money, you know, with all the overheads, it's like restaurants, you know, the overheads are huge. You've really got to know what you're doing. It's not just about, can you train yourself? Have you, you know, helped yourself? It's right. It's like now, okay, so now there's so many more important things on that list. And so those were the most important school fees initially, was the business side of this.
I think a lot of personal trainers kind of, if they're wanting to go in that route, should get that business side knowledge, because you never know. Because when you're going into working at a gym, you're just an employee up there as a personal trainer, where you're kind of not really realizing, okay, what does it take to have you as an employee? How much money do you have to make a profit for the business? Having that business knowledge would have been beneficial for a lot of them, because you kind of know, how do you have to run? And then it could lead to where you were at that time owning that gym. 20% is still quite a chunk of that company. But I always say, if you have the opportunity to learn from other aspects, take that opportunity, because you never know when that advice, that information will be utilized. As a gym owner, when you're personal training, what did you like about it? Did you like being around the people that were part of the gym, or did you kind of like only wanted to focus on what you needed to do and that's it? Did you play more of the actually be a part of the business or the kind of silent I'm doing myself?
That's a really good question. That's a really good question. I liked to be in the gym because I kind of feel that the gym, or the gym saved my life. The gym was a place that I went to. It kind of kept me out of a lot of trouble, which was good. It helped me focus on my health. It helped my diabetes. I've always had relatively high levels of muscle mass, and that's purely just because of what I do on a daily basis. That helped my diabetes immensely. I was able to process more carbohydrates than most diabetics I was speaking to at that stage. I was still in the learning phase of I actually the internet wasn't even really around at that age or that stage. Like Facebook had kind of just started then. And so it wasn't really common to speak to many other people living with diabetes. And so I found that because I was so active and because strength training and performance and developing your character through physical training programs and so on, everything kind of just worked really well for me. And I wanted to share that with as many people as I possibly could. I enjoyed the gym floor. I enjoyed working with people, but I enjoyed the training part and working with people the most. So much so that it took me a very long time to even try and get into the business part of it because that wasn't really fun for me. But the thing is, if you're going to go into the business side of things, and if you're going to try and make money from your passion, there are going to be certain things that you need to get really good at, that you're not going to be good at, that you're going to have to learn to either outsource or get really good at. It was the connecting with people and really just trying to get them from a place of pain, struggle, and fear. Towards that place of safety, security, and certainty. That was really what it was, because that's what I got from it. And that was what I wanted to, and still do want to give as many people as possible. And I had my gyms for 10 years. I closed them down in 2017 for two reasons. One, there's only so much time in the day, and I didn't want to be stuck at not stuck at but at one location that I could never leave. And I got some trainers out from the States. We had a really good competition team here. I had two CrossFit affiliates here. I was one of the first CrossFit level two trainers in the country. And so we had a I was a locally sponsored athlete, and so I competed and it was fantastic. But business owner, coach, athlete, you can only be two. You can't be three. And out of the three, I was kind of like athlete coach. So business owner was on the other one. And I realized the way Cape Town properties go, there's no money in owning physical facilities. And that's when I went online. That's pretty much when I went online, was in June 2017, because there was a huge part of what I was missing. I was training people that weren't living with any kind of condition. I only started focusing on people with diabetes or autoimmune conditions in 2017 when I closed my gyms. And I realized what had been missing for so long is that the why of the people I had in my gyms was never as strong as the people I had online. I started a blog called diabeticathletic.com, well, .wordpress.blog. It was how I documented my journey into my life of either living with the body and mind of a diabetic or trying to live with the body and mind of someone who's more athletic. And so I realized when I started speaking to those of us with diabetes online, their why was so much stronger. It's because we know what it's like to lose our health, to have a piece of our health. Well, really, let's not cut the crap. I mean, diabetes, you've lost a large portion of your health. So you either work a little harder than the average person and then everything's great, or you don't and then everything's not. And it was that why that made me realize who I wanted to work with, and who could actually, get me out of bed going, shit, I'm at work today and I enjoy it. And so that was the biggest thing for me, is that I wasn't bad at business. I was just not in the right, wasn't with the right. Well, business, I guess. Yeah. The why is a lot stronger. And that's, I guess that's pretty much the long-winded answer there.
You've had experience with working out and fitness in your life. If you only could have to do one type of fitness routine, what would that be? You could only do one. What do
Ooh,
you
I
think would
like
be the
this.
beneficial for you?
Right. I don't know if this is the answer you expect. It's a difficult question to answer straight up. Initially, I just want to say strength training because strength training is highly beneficial. The reason we train is to keep our skeleton structurally sound, to stay strong, right? When we get old and fragile, it's because the muscles get a lot weaker and the instability sets in and our frame isn't really as strong. And so it's a dangerous place to be if your strength to body weight ratio is off. So I would say strength training, especially because it's, the afterburn of calories is so much higher compared to really anything else. And being strong is really important. I mean, if you're not strong, you're weak. And so it's really that plain, cut and simple. Weak people can't handle loads that strong people can, mentally, emotionally, and physically. We're not just talking about physical strength here. There's a lot of character development in strength training programs. And so my initial answer wants to be strength, but there's two oars to this boat. And this really gets lost is that the boat, we can't just row with one oar because we're just going to go around in circles. And so whatever discipline you do choose, it would be an element that takes care of my cardiovascular wellness and health, because that's my heart health, right? And then your strength. And so a strength training program that is not 100% biased to just weights, but that keeps rowing with both oars, your cardiovascular fitness plus your strength and structure and stability and just your ability, that would be pretty much it. That would be my training approach.
Now, going off of strength training, do you ever feel that you've overpushed yourself when it comes to strength training, which could cause injuries and kind of could take an effect from your professional, what you do as a career, and it affects you in your personal life?
Absolutely. A lot of us train too hard, buddy. A lot of us go through this thing where we put all of our effort into our training, but we just don't even, we don't, we need to remember that you only reap the benefit of whatever training you're doing when you are recovering from that training. So if, most of us will put an extra 40% into our training protocols or into our workouts or into our exercise regime. But the ideal situation there would be to put 20% into your training and the other 20% into your recovery, because that's what turns it changes. Because then, your workouts start to become bills instead of investments, they become costs. And as soon as you put a competitive edge onto whatever exercise you're doing, something that is meant to be good for you becomes very bad for you. Something that is meant to be the cause of injury prevention, like strength training, starts to become the reason you are always more injured. And so when I started to really get into the competitive side of fitness, it started to become extremely unhealthy. It was bad for my diabetes. It was bad for my glucose control. It's not summing up. I mean, it was just not, we're meant to exercise and we're meant to move and we're meant to really remember that balance is healthy. And as soon as you go on to either side of the spectrum too far, something healthy can become unhealthy. The devil is in the dose. And so when you're training really, really hard and not paying attention to your recovery, when you're training for podium and there's a lot on the line where you start to neglect your diabetes or your glucose control, ignoring your glucose levels or not ignoring them, just keeping them higher so that you can get through the events. No one wants to bomb out of an event for a low sugar. So we keep it high and we just go and we deal with the glucose levels afterwards. That turns a very healthy thing into something that can actually be quite unhealthy. And I definitely felt that. Lots of injuries, lots of diabetic neglect, lots of focus into my physical health for so many years that I neglected my emotional and mental strength, well-being. I was just so much on that physical glory that I got to realize there's gym, right? But then there's also mind gym and heart gym and physical strength gym. You've got to make sure that that's all in place, because if you've only got one out of the three, it's an imbalance, and an imbalance is unhealthy.
I think that was always my struggle, is I was so worried about not doing any athletic competition because of my blood sugar. And I'm always like, well, it's going to go low. I don't even want to test it. I don't even want to try it. But then this last year, I kind of got out of that mindset, did my first Tough Mudder, and my blood sugar was so good because I knew how my body was going to react. And at any checkpoint, the person I was running with, I was like, hey, we're going to check this just to make sure we get the full outing, like really perform at the highest level and not have to worry about me being in an ice bath and I'm having low blood sugar and someone's got to carry me out because I can't get through the competition or in any of those obstacles. So it's given me more confidence where I think with us diabetics, we kind of have to say we can do anything. Like, just because we have this condition doesn't mean we can't. We might have to work a little harder, might have to strategize a little better, but we should never say we can't do something just because of diabetes.
Absolutely, 100%. And you know, even if you take the diabetes away from what you've just said, the whole point of being intentional about putting challenges out there for yourself is to test yourself, test your grit. How are you mentally, emotionally, and physically? It might be just a physical challenge, but a physical challenge becomes a real test of your character. Are you a person who will give up on something once you get tested or you get into that area of, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I'm going to get through something as simple as a workout. That is where you find who you actually are. And diabetes is another one of those things. It is the challenge that will test you to find out who are you when things get really difficult. Are you the person that says, oh, I'm just going to stay away from carbohydrates and events that stress me out in my diabetes? Because that's like staying away from a workout because you know you're going to run out of breath, or it might be too heavy and you might not be able to lift it up, or whatever it may be. These are things that, you know, regardless of us being living with diabetes or not, we have got to have tests that test us so that we can see who are we and is that person the version of ourselves we want to actually be living with. And well, you know, now that we've got the diabetes in the mix, that doesn't always mean that you're just going to be this person that is able to tackle challenges, because the same person that has or gets a diabetic diagnosis, if you've run from challenges, you know, you've never intentionally put challenges in front of you, the chances of you running initially when a challenge like diabetes comes across are quite high. And so, whether you're living with diabetes or not, but especially if you are living with something like diabetes, you have got to be on a physical training program that is testing your might so that you can actually train. That's why they call it training instead of workouts, training your character, the person you actually are, to test yourself and go, I'm not a person who stays away from things just because they're difficult. I'm not a person who gives up just because something was hard, you know. And you also learn that after putting in work comes result, which a lot of people don't ever really see. They go, oh, I'm not motivated. But if you actually intentionally put things out like a training program again, you realize that true motivation only ever comes after the results, right? Results are extremely motivating. And so, yeah, regardless of, you know, having diabetes or not, we've got to intentionally put those challenges out there. Diabetes is a big challenge. That's like getting given a Ferrari going, okay, go learn to drive in, you know, in traffic, or going, okay, no, rather let's put you in a car lot with no cars around you and you can kind of learn there. You know, you don't diabetes is kind of going to learn to drive in traffic, but there's a lot of lessons that you can learn so that you don't have to ding the nice car, and that all comes from a training program.
We've talked about your professional journey that you've been on. And now we're going to dive more deeper into the personal journey of who Nicholas is. From your performance today, what has been the one positive of how diabetes has helped you from a peak condition? And what's a challenge that you're going to be working on in the next coming months, next year, or future goals with diabetes and your peak performance?
Wow, that's a good question there. My mind went racing to a million places as you said that. Why don't you just repeat that question again, though?
So what's your one positive that diabetes has done for your peak performance from strength and everything? And what's a challenge you're going to work on in the future that you're hoping to accomplish with diabetes and fitness?
Yeah. Okay. So, what am I going to work on? That's a tough one. I mean, look, the easy answer is that I've gone through phases of not giving my diabetes attention, and I've gone through phases of giving my diabetes a lot of attention. Diabetes has really solidified the fact that the grass that we water is the only grass that grows, and grass is not greener on the other side. Grass is greener wherever you water it. And as much as I wish, and I don't sit here going, oh, I wish I didn't have diabetes, but let's be honest, if we could maybe just go, oh, we're not diabetic anymore, most of us would probably be like, cool, yeah, I'll go with that one. But we've got it and it's not going anywhere. So, you know, the biggest part of, or the positive of having diabetes, if there is a positive, I guess, just the lessons is that, you know, it's really taught me that everything is going to be okay as long as we put time and attention into trying to have everything and to be okay. I'm kind of butchering the answer here. It's a very difficult question. It is a difficult question, but the negative to be working on, over my career, and not so much particular to diabetes alone, but over my career and over my life growing up and just doing what I've been doing, is that I put a lot of eggs into my physical basket my entire life. It was always about physical health, and I didn't really give any time and attention to my mental and my emotional health ever. I was, you know, birthed into survival mode just from growing up. At school, I was in survival mode. After school, I was in survival mode. Even in my, you know, starting my career with diabetes and trying to navigate it, I was in survival mode. Having my gyms was also in survival mode. And when lockdown happened, I kind of had a moment, a pivotal point where I realized how emotionally and mentally unfinished and unhealthy I actually was. And I realized that, you know, if we have any chance of managing our diabetes, if we have any chance of getting the most out of the life and the time we get to spend on our one spin on this earth, we have got to make sure that we approach health as health, right? Mental health is health. Emotional health is health, and physical health is health. You can't miss out on, you can't be too strong on the one and too empty on the other. And so, you know, since 2022 and even now, I realized that I had a lot of traumas that I needed to deal with. I had a lot of work to do with my mental and my emotional well-being. And that was kind of the, you know, changing point of just seeing health as this physical, be strong, look good, be healthy, have good blood work, to going, okay, that's all important, but who are you at the end of the day? What conversations are you having with other people? But also, what conversations are going on in between your head? How are you talking to yourself? You know, how do you see yourself? How do you see yourself as someone living, you know, with an illness? What kind of level of confidence do you truly have? Not what level of confidence do you say you have when people ask, but, you know, and that was, yeah, I don't think I've answered your question, you know, too well. But one of the things I definitely still need to work on is just trying to make sure that I'm watering the grass where my feet are, you know, being present in the moment, and, well, just making sure that, you know, we always see and approach health as, well, a collective kind of term. It's not one thing.
You answered it. I like to give challenging questions. I mean, that's the point. We got to rise to the challenge. To going off of the question I asked you, for me, the positive that came out of it was focus. was hitting the goals that I want to and be proud of the accomplishments that I've gone and taken. The challenge is to really push myself to the next level and really be really testing myself, both in a physical, mental mindset, and every aspect to really show that it's not going to stop me. So I want to continue that challenge. And I know the next year is going to be even better because I've really been focusing on what am I going to do to get there. So you answered it. It's one of those that it's not a straight answer that someone can answer, because what you mentioned is there's a lot more pieces in that goal. So you have that one goal, but there's so many pieces that come around it that you get to that goal. So you answered it perfectly, because even someone can take that same answer, even if they don't have diabetes, they still have to look at that in their own personal life. Even people who are triathletes or people that are business professionals, they have to look at all those different avenues in a way that's going to help them reach their goals or the positive that they have and really get even farther.
Totally, totally.
Looking at what people may not know about you, what does Nicholas like to do for fun? When you're not working, when you're not posting, when you're not creating content, when you're not coaching. I mean, I've seen your backyard, so I'm very jealous of that. But, and I've seen your cooking skills. What does Nicholas like to do for fun?
I like to play sports. For fun. I mean, I like tennis a lot. I like being in the sun, but I don't like lying in the sun. And so tennis really, you know, it's I played a lot of tennis growing up. I spent a lot of time on the courts and then, well, in the gym. And so those two things are pretty much you know, part and parcel of what I do when I need a break. You know, I've got gym memberships. I've got quite a big gym here at home. When I closed my gym down, I kind of kept everything that I you know, wanted to in excess, but here at home, and you know, we kind of took the cars outside and turned the garages into a gym. And so, you know, I've got like four gym memberships as well. And so I go from gym to gym different days, so just a different location. But really spending some time in the Iron Paradise, woodwork. We call it a braai here, but barbecue is the same thing. Well, really just spending time at home with my kid. I mean, that's well, and the missus, but yeah, that's what I like to do for fun. I like to cook. I'm not very good at cooking, I have to be honest. I'm super plain. What's my protein? What's my veg? What's my carb? There you go. Nice and simple. But yeah, woodwork is probably one of the passions that I have that most people don't know that I have. Yeah, but that's pretty much what I'm doing when I'm not working, is I'm either on the courts or being super, well, useless watching
So the next year, we're gonna get you to be a five-star chef so that you can go on those cooking shows on Netflix, and then you're gonna go train to be a professional tennis player. We got a bunch of goals. We got a bunch of goals for you for next
Netflix.
year, basically.
It's funny you say that. You know, I kind of missed, I left music out of there. I really love piano. I play by ear, not very well, but I love the piano. I spend about 15 to 20 minutes on the piano per day. I'm not good at all, but yeah, I don't know why I left that one out, but that's pretty much I wish I could sing, man. I wish I could sing. I can sing hour. That was just what, yeah, one thing I wish I had was a good voice. Music is such an incredible language. So yeah, barbecues or braais, woodwork, and music, I would say, are pretty much three. When I'm not working, it's one of those three things.
The final question I'll ask you for someone that's listened to this interview based on your journey and experience, what tips or advice would you give them to overcome obstacles, accomplish their goals, and rise to the challenge?
Tips or advice? That is also a very good question. I think the first thing is to realize or to remember, just keep in mind that it's okay not to be okay. right? A lot of us think that there's something wrong when we're not okay. And I think that needs to be spoken about a lot more. It's okay not to be okay. To remember that no matter who you are, you can do hard things, mm-hmm. right? We all think we, challenges and trials and tribulations and things that are difficult are things that we should not expect, or the things that we shouldn't be running towards something, things that we should be running away from. But those are the things. It's the price of entry to success is failure. So, if I said to you that you're 20 no's away from getting the biggest yes of your life, would you not run and try and get the first 19 no's quick as possible if you knew that you were 20 no's away? And the same goes for challenge, right? It is unavoidable. It is part of life. And just because it's difficult doesn't mean you can't do it. And so my second thing would be to remember that you can do hard things. And then I guess the last one is that there is a difference between life with diabetes and living with diabetes, right? It's a condition. It's an illness. It's a diagnosis. It is something that everyone can get. But not everyone is living with diabetes. They're just spending a life with diabetes in it. And so really, the third thing is just to really ask yourself, how do you want to spend your very limited time on this one spin of the earth? How do you want to spend it? Who is the person you want to be? Who do you want to be around? And go for that. Because a lot of us don't, and we settle for a lot less than we should. And some of us, because we think that what we have is all we're going to have, some of us need to, just hang around people and sit at tables where they're having different discussions. But also maybe, some of us just need to understand that there is a difference between life with diabetes and actually living with it. And, we're not our diagnosis. We've got earwax. We're not earwax. We've got diabetes. We are not diabetes. We can do whatever the hell we want to do. We just need to make sure that what we think and say we want to do, we really need to make sure that what we value aligns with that. And if your values are, if your values are something you've given enough thought to, or just any thought to, really just to try and make sure that you're aligning your actions with those values. And a lot of us, a lot of us don't give enough time to what we truly value. We say we want a six pack or we want to be lean, but really what we want to do is we want to have more time with the people that we love. And so it becomes a whole lot less about your six pack, but about putting a daily action into place that allows you to stay strong, to be able to buy yourself some extra time to do the things that you say, that you value. And sure, six pack is maybe a byproduct of that, how you feel living in your skin, but really, your true value is just to know that there is a difference between life with diabetes and living with it. I'd say those are the three, the biggest tips. And just to keep the main thing the main thing. We all is like, what diet, what training protocol, this and the next thing, following general advice for very specific problems that we have. You need to keep the main thing the main thing. What is it that you're after? What is it that you want? And is what you're doing really aligned with what it is that you're after? Main thing, the main thing. That's the main thing.
Nicholas, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about your rise to the challenge. You're inspiring so many people, and we are excited to see what the future looks like for you.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on here. It was a really enjoyable conversation. It felt natural, and but it's been really good to connect with you and to see what you've been doing as well in the space. I just want to say thanks and appreciate you too.
Tune in next time, hear my next guest talk about their rise to the challenge. Remember to follow, subscribe on all major audio platforms, and make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel through the full length episode and video format. What path do you take to accomplish your goals? You decide.